Welcome one and all once again to the episode 135. We are coming to you this fine Monday, March 31st, in the year 2014, or as it's been dubbed this year, the year of the bat, as it is Batman's 75th anniversary, and Warner has kind of ate up most of that stuff for you this past week. But we don't talk, we've already talked Arkham Knight, and there's nothing new on that front. Unless you want to actually talk about the design of Arkham Knight, who looks like Iron Man had a baby with Batman.
It's just the same kind of design as every sci-fi thing ever nowadays.
It's a really lazy and uninspired design, really. It's just a metal Batman.
Yeah.
It reminds me way too much of Terry.
Yeah, that's people
just
said that.
Just metal form.
There were smarter ways to do it. It's weird to take on the disguise of Batman, but that's always kind of been a comic book trope. I mean, for every Spider-Man, there's a man spider. For every Batman, there's a man bat. Stuff like that. Because yep. It makes sense that you're going to take the natural extreme of your superhero to create a villain. So it makes sense that if you're an anti-Batman, you're just Batman in armor. Or more armor, I should say.
Next, you'll have a gun.
He'll have a gun. Well, Batman carries guns. It's just not anything
shoot people with it.
Yeah. But yes, as you heard, I'm joined this week by Martin and Daniel.
Hello.
Hello.
And we have a very interesting show this week. There's a lot of random news and stuff like that. I guess we can kick it off with impressions. I don't know. I know Daniel's been playing something new. I don't know about Martin. Well, actually, Martin played something for a review, so let's kick him off there, even though you can find a full review on the site.
Sure. I played Mercenary Kings for review. Played the Windows version of it, which I got from Steam. And, did we talk about the game last week, or was that off air?
That was off air.
That was off air, okay.
You were trying to explain it to me.
Yeah, so Mercenary Kings kind of is a mix between Metal Slug and Monster Hunter. So you take the basic, let's say, combat of Metal Slug with just jumping and shooting into four directions, and they also give you a roll. And then they don't build a normal level structure around this, but basically give you a home camp, and you can actually take missions. And these missions can then be gathering missions, or you hunt down a boss, or you have to kill specific enemies in a zone. And, So, the thing is, the game is actually really fun, especially when you play with a couple of friends. You can play with up to three others, either offline or online, doesn't matter. And that is actually pretty good, at least for, I don't know what I said in my review, like 6 to 8 hours. But at some point, the issue is that the game just turns out to be a bit too grindy. I mean, the gameplay doesn't really evolve much. Okay, enemies get some more armor, or you have to maybe use an elemental weakness, but it doesn't evolve beyond the jumping, shooting, reloading, and rolling. And the enemies don't really... Yeah, which, unlike Monster Hunter, at least you get enemies that where you have to really... That really change the patterns, and you really have to develop different tactics, maybe even use different weapons. And yes, you can modify a weapon, but it's mostly just how fast can you shoot, how far can you shoot, how much damage you do, how much ammo do you have in a magazine. And the gameplay is basically just stretched to thin over the length of the game. If this game was like, let's say, half the length, I would say it would hold up way better. But your mileage may vary if you don't mind the grindiness. It's still a good game, just a bit too grindy.
Yeah, I've seen other people echo your sentiment that it feels like a game that either doesn't benefit from a deep enough combat system that evolves over time, or that the missions kind of become too samey to hold it up throughout the duration of the campaign.
Yeah, you have the same missions like Monster Hunter, but like I said, since these enemies Monster Hunter involve more of you actually knowing the systems and engaging with the systems more, this game really doesn't get that deep, I felt like. And also, the issue is since they don't really have that many environments, to be honest. So a couple more environments would have also helped.
But, I mean, I guess part of it is that it is free on PlayStation Plus starting on Tuesday. So, I mean, for free, you can recommend it. And
oh, yeah. Totally.
Like, okay, do the characters fame much differently from each other, or is it basically just going to be whatever type of weapon you prefer?
Yeah, it's just the weapon stuff that changes up how you basically shoot. And there are no different characters. I mean, at the beginning of the game, you can pick either a male or a female character, but they don't change in any other form than it's a different sprite. Those are very beautiful sprites because the game looks gorgeous. It's really great 2D pixel art, really well animated, but it's just an optical change, nothing else.
Okay. So yeah, like you said, check out the full review on the site. I believe you gave it a 5 out of 7.
Yeah.
Sounds like a fun...
It's a good game. Just...
Yeah. If nothing else, I think it also kind of cautions maybe moderation. I know it's not that young of a game, but maybe not play it, don't marathon it too much in a day. Maybe like once a week with friends or something like that would help the monotony.
And okay. The other thing I played a bit more of was I decided to play a bit more of the Strife beta, which is the new MOBA by S2 Games, the guys who made Heroes of New Earth, which at this point, I don't know, might as well be dead. I don't think a lot of people are still playing that. And their attempt is to make a more casual MOBA, so there still is last hitting, but there are no concepts of like when you die, losing money, stuff like that doesn't exist. You share experience with your team. You even share money. There is no need for support to basically just be there to harass people and don't take any of the gold. Doesn't really matter because if you kill someone, you get only half a gold and the rest of the gold is divided up among the team. Stuff like that. It plays a lot easier. It's also a lot quicker. Like usually a game's like 20 to 30 minutes, and which, I mean, Dota match is usually more like 30 to 45 minutes, maybe even longer. So it's all right to play. Their free-to-play models also seems, let's say, player-friendly. But if you don't like the kind of audience that, or let's say like this, if you think the MOBA player base is a bit toxic, it's just the same here.
I don't think there's going to be any game that would be able to fix that, to be honest, because it's just the kind of thing that happens. I mean, player bases are toxic in online games anyway, and just the way those games work at the very core, I think, just exaggerates that in people.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things they try is to not let you chat with the enemy team while playing, but I think that's actually the least issue these games have. Most of the problems come from your own team, when basically people start yelling at each other and blaming them for losing the game, and that's still not solved in any way. Maybe Heroes of the Storm is a bit better because they really share the experience among everyone. It doesn't really matter if you're close to them. Maybe that will change it. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Okay. What about you, Daniel? What have you been playing?
I played Bioshock Infinite Burial at Sea Episode 2 because I had the season pass. So I thought, you know what, I may as well because I've already paid for it. And I don't like it. I don't like it at all. And I've tried to find somebody else out there that shares the same opinion, and I haven't found it. So I don't know. But it just feels like how Irrational Games has been for the entirety of Bioshock Infinite, which is to say it just feels overproduced in the sense that, okay, I thought, you know, we're getting stealth mechanics, you know, that would be quite cool considering Bioshock Infinite's, one of Bioshock Infinite's big problems is its mediocre first-person shooting. Well, it turns out it has bad stealth now in a mediocre shooter. And it just, I don't know. I mean, the idea is, oh, sweet, I'm playing as Elizabeth. That's really cool. It makes sense that I can't just shoot people because that's not what Elizabeth is. That's not who she is. And then you realise that the AI for the stealth is really inconsistent. I'd be hiding behind... They add a few things in, like, if you step on glass, it doesn't matter whether you're crouching or not, you make noise. And the same goes for water and like, metal, I think. And even when you're not standing on those surfaces and walking, like, people will just see you. And it's like, but I was hiding. How did you see me? And anyway, I found out that you can easily get around that by spamming the button that shows you what direction to run in and then literally just running in that direction the entire time. And then you can just dance around all the enemies and nobody can hit you and you can win. So that's how I ended up playing the game because the stealth was just so frustrating. It would have been as bad if... Okay, so let's compare it to Dishonored, and I think Dishonored is a great game. And the way the weapons work in Dishonored is you get very low amounts of ammo. I think you get like 5 max for each. And those weapons are very effective at getting you out of trouble and killing an aggressor, but you then have to deal with the body of that aggressor. Whereas in Bioshock Infinite, they decided to limit the amount of ammo you have, but also make them not very good at killing people, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So anyway, I got over my the stupid stealth, and I basically ran the entire thing, and I thought, you know what, the story will at least probably be decent. And it turns out that Ken Levine decided he was going to completely link the story of the first game to Bioshock Infinite, and I was like, he didn't have to answer these questions, like, why is this happening? And so I finished the DLC disappointed in the gameplay because it wasn't great, disappointed in the story because it answered questions that I didn't even ask, to be honest. And it feels like Ken just kind of tied everything up just so nobody could touch his Bioshock baby, you know?
Technically, aren't was what you just mentioned, hasn't this already been answered within Bioshock Infinite? I mean, not
well, this
maybe to a 100% satisfaction, but
they could have
that they are connected in a way. It has
stated that there was a relation to the first Bioshock and Bioshock Infinite at the end of Infinite.
Yeah.
But what it does is it says it basically goes and then insinuates. And I'm trying to explain this without spoiling it. It basically implicates that the entire event, all the events of Bioshock 1 occurred because Bioshock Infinite happened. Like, it ties them right together in, like, so tightly. And it's like, you really did not need to do this. Like, I was better off not knowing any of this.
Mm.
So, you know,
yep.
It's kind of a shame, and it feels like it just feels like Ken Levine tied it all together so nobody could touch it after he's done with it. And now that Irrational Games has been gutted and they're doing a different thing now, you know, nobody can touch Bioshock. It's all tied up. And
well, I mean, somebody can touch Bioshock. You can expand.
They
can
do, yes, but like it worked. Like, now that they've, I don't know. They just didn't need to do that. So I'm not impressed with the gameplay. I'm not impressed with the story. And I left on a complete sour note, and I was like, oh, well, that was a complete waste of money for the season pass.
That was going to be my follow-up question. Is there anything that was redeemable about the season pass, or the oil wash?
You know, the first DLC was a combat-only DLC, obviously, in a game that has mediocre first-person shooting. And the first burial sea was nothing without the second one. And the second one isn't great because it's badly implemented stealth. So, shrug.
So say yay for that. This is why season passes are so awesome. It's like buying a giant.
That's why you don't buy a season pass.
I mean, we harp on the fact that, you know, the Call of Duty season passes and stuff for just multiplayer maps, but it's much harder to disappoint with multiplayer maps. Let's face it.
Probably true.
Like, oh, I get some more environments to keep this game fresh. Cool, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the big thing with Call of Duty, is that you know what you're getting with the season pass. You know exactly. Like, you may not like all of the maps, but you know that you're buying pretty much four map packs of, like, four maps apiece for the next 6 months.
Same goes for Battlefield, for example.
Yeah. Like, I think, I don't really buy them in general, but I do think they make a bit more sense for, like, a multiplayer game, because, you know, it's just extended. Like, I think, especially with single-player content, you don't necessarily know if you're going to enjoy the single-player game, and you don't necessarily know what they're going to give you with the added season pass. Like, a lot of this doesn't even seem like it adds much to the infinite story. It just seems like it wants to bridge the gap between the two games.
I mean, it was a shame, because I purchased a season pass in the hopes that we got another Minerva's Den, and it didn't happen, which is a shame.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, it probably would have been cheaper and more, you know, timely if you just bought it one by one to see what it was. But this is what happens when people ask you for money up front. And I assume, though, when you probably got it at some steep discount anyhow.
Yeah, I bought it at a discount. I don't buy season passes unless they're discounted, so. Yeah. I've also been playing. I sort of dipped my toes into Dark Souls. I know the game's super old, and I know everyone else has played it to death by now. But, like, it was a game that I was not expecting to like at all, and I really like it because it has a lot of what I wish more games had, which is, actually, it links back to Burial at Sea quite well, in the sense that all the mechanics in Dark Souls are very consistent, and they work the same time every time. You just need to know what to do when. And, you know, this is the way this enemy behaves. So when he jabs his spear at me, that's when I dart out of the way and stab him in the back. And I really, really like that. I mean, the game is really scary because you're walking across an area and you think, this area is a little bit too peaceful for me. And then down comes this massive thing and it's like, oh, yeah, of course it's a boss fight. Great. And, you know, the boss fight's sort of a hurdle to get over, but that's the point of the game. So I'm going to play Dark Souls, and I reckon I'm gonna attempt to finish the game. I'm going to play it little bit by bit, though, because I can't play that game a whole lot at a time.
It's not an impossible game. It's a lot about the game. A lot of the game is basically learning.
Yeah, I mean,
learning how the mechanics work, and training yourself to be more cautious than you would be in basically any other game.
Yeah, and after you die in an area a couple of times, you know exactly how to not die now. You do this, and then I do that, and then I do this and that, and I'm through this area, and I can figure out how to do the next one.
Yep.
I really like that. I wish more games were more consistent with the mechanics like that, where it, you know, Dark Souls lays down its rules plainly and clearly, and it sticks to them all the time, and then occasionally throws a wild card at you and says, you know what, you have to now use these rules to deal with this.
And the real fun thing is to figure out how, as a player, you can actually break the rules yourself to your favor.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice having a game where the enemies play by the same rules as you do.
It's always fair. But I mean, a lot of games, I mean, most of the enemies do play by the rules you play by.
Well, most of them, like, Dark Souls, like, If you compare it to most campaign, like most single player games, in Dark Souls, if you can see it, you can kill it. You're going to face it at some point, and if you face it, you can kill it. There's none of this bullcrap where they're going to throw you something at you in a scripted sequence where you have to die or you have to get out of there or something.
And then the big example is always one of the dragons you can meet early on.
Oh yeah, I saw that and I was like, I'm going to kill that point.
And you can just walk by it through another way, or if you want to, you can shoot 100 of arrows at him and actually kill it.
Yeah.
And you actually get something cool out of it.
Yeah.
Just as a bit of a tangent, I guess, I've never had any problem with the issue of it. Bosses or things that you couldn't defeat in the game, because it does help to kind of show character growth. I just wish people had a better way of implementing it, and then you know. It's especially irksome in RPGs when you like waste a bunch of like potions and special abilities and find out that you couldn't win the battle anyhow. It's just like, I need some type of cue that this isn't going to work, instead of having me waste all of my time and then ultimately realize it's not going to work anyhow.
Yeah, that was something that was infuriating to me at one point in Bravely Default, where there was a boss fight engaged, and I used like a bunch of basically Phoenix Downs, and then later learned that this was just story related. Great.
Yeah. Still do that.
Yeah.
Still. Oh Jesus.
Because again, it's an interesting trope. It's something that they use in movies and TV shows, but that's more effective because you can.
Well, because in movies and that, like you don't have a player to train. Like you've killed three bosses, but oh no, not this one. You can't kill this one.
Yeah,
you can't just turn the rules on their head. Yeah.
And just half an hour later, I had to fight the same guys again. Then I was allowed to kill them.
and even then, I think half an hour. I mean, in a video game, it's way too quick to think, oh, you leveled up enough for this. Now you can kick their ass. Like, I think it's supposed to be something that, like, if you introduce one of the final bosses or one of like, the top goons ahead of time, and then it's something that progresses throughout the game, I can understand that. But to say, like, oh yeah, I just went to the cave down the street, I got me some ice.
Exactly. That was the biggest fault, I thought, of that moment, was that it wasn't even the big bad guys, it was just two of his henchmen.
Yeah.
This is really weird. That happens.
One kind of design thing I like was, I realized this the other day, is in Serious Sam, especially 3, what the game does is it introduces an enemy to you as a boss, and then later on it just throws them at you normally, and I really like that, because like once you've fought it as a boss, you know how tough they are, and you know how to take them out. And
you know, it's the rage mentality. Beat 'em up when you fight a boss, and then usually after that, the boss will become normal enemy.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
The Souls games also do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Streets of Rage is old school. I think Final Fight as well, but yeah. I am going to skip me mostly this week because I've really been playing the same stuff again. NES Remix, Bit Trip Runner, Halo 4, Dungeon Defenders, which is the games for gold right now, which ends by the time this goes up, I guess. So yeah, nothing too fancy and too new for me. I am excited. I know it's really weird for GBA games on the virtual console coming out this week. Because a lot of them, I didn't have a GBA for long because of situations, but I'm excited for that. I'm actually excited for a lot of digital games this month.
Yeah, there seems to be loads of stuff coming out that's good.
Child of Light, Shovel Knight, NES
Daylight.
Daylight. I mean, it has to be because there's like no retail games coming out this month at all.
Nintendo Pocket Football Club.
For some of us. Oh, Rusty's Real Deal Baseball comes out this week. But I guess...
For some of us.
I guess we'll have impressions of these stuff when we pick them up throughout the course of the month. Which I guess brings us to news. And we're going to kick it off. I mean, it's been about a week since the story broke. So hopefully everybody has, you know, cool your heads prevailed now. But it came out that Facebook has purchased Oculus Rift for $2 billion.
Something like $400 million in cash and then $1.6 billion in Facebook stock.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I should think they needed to kickstart that.
Which is where all the root of the problem actually comes, I think.
I don't get the problem.
You
kickstarted basically the company, and all they promised you was DevKit.
Oh, this is it. I mean, the first major reaction, apart from everybody's, was Notch's, where he said something like Facebook creeps him out. Excuse me. And that's fine. I understand that Facebook creeps him out, because it creeps me out as well. But he said that he didn't pay $10,000 to be the first round investments for a Facebook buyout, and that's ridiculous. If he wanted to invest in the company and have any control in its future, he should have actually become a venture capitalist.
Yeah, I think that's a big problem with Kickstarter. A lot of people, I mean, you're not investing, you're donating.
Yep. Oh, this is it, and you're donating in for a product that may or may not see the light of day eventually.
Yeah.
Like in this case, basically starting a company, and that's something I would usually stay away from and just kickstart stuff that where you know it's just about this one product.
Yeah, or even if in case of one product that may eventually change. Like even the Veronica Mars movie, like people kickstarted that, and then Warner Brothers ended up flipping the bill for distribution, so they made money off of basically no production cost, but. You know, again, you don't basically you're buying a ticket in advance, and it's the same thing here. You're buying an Oculus Rift in advance. You're not doing nothing else. That's the Kickstarter mentality. It's one of the reasons why the only things I ever support is stuff I'm gonna buy personally, not stuff that you know promises something down the road as something interesting or cool or whatever. That was part of it. A lot of the other reaction was a lot of people just seem to hate Facebook.
Well, I'm kind of with that. In the sense that Facebook is not a company that sells hardware for profit. They care about user numbers, and that is all they care about. You know, they care about user numbers and selling ads and data mining. And I don't think I would trust them with a piece of hardware like this, especially if we don't even know, because they say that they plan on still concentrating on the games for now, right? But who's to say that doesn't change in... You know, 10 years, 5 years, 1 year, 6 months, 1 month, you know? They could just say, no, we're not doing this anymore, and then that's it, it's gone. And it happens a lot of the time.
I'm actually on board with that, and I tried to explain this. I know, I actually think it's more interesting because I do think that VR has a lot more interesting applications outside of games. I'm not saying it doesn't necessarily have its place in games, but I think VR being used for different types of applications throughout any type of entertainment or medium has potential, and I think having a backing of a company as big as Facebook, who, as you said, cares about the numbers, allows it to open up beyond like the PC. I can see it being used in like amusement parks and museums and stuff like that now as well. And I think the potential is there. It's like if it has a huge user base, then you have more people who are willing to support it. It becomes kind of like and I know this isn't going to be a comparison to a lot of people, like it becomes kind of like the mobile sector, where because it's out there for millions and millions and millions of people, it becomes easier for people who probably don't see it being worth to make a game for it, making an application that makes it just as interesting, which makes more people interested in it, which makes more people buy it.
I don't know. The biggest concern is just that Facebook is not a company that sells a product for profit. They sell the people that use their service to advertisers instead. And I don't want that happening with the Oculus Rift. I want it to be a piece of hardware that you pay for and you get it, you know?
Yeah, and but I mean, how has that changed?
What do you mean, how has that changed?
Like, I mean, I'm granted.
Facebook could do any number of things. They could lock it to their own platform. They've said they won't, but... Really, who trusts a big company when, I mean, let's face it, a company buyout happens and they say, oh, don't worry, we're not going to change all the time. And how often does that actually stay?
So, I know you have reached some of this last week as well, but then our game is as upset with Sony for the same thing because they're locking the Morpheus to their platforms.
The difference is, though, is Sony is a company that sells hardware for profit. And, you know, they were good. I say they are good at that. They were good at that. They're not so good at it now. but it's something that they can do, and it's something that they care about, and it's been their business for since the dawn of time. And, you know, the people who were interested in Oculus were interested in it because it was an open thing, and that may not happen anymore. And, you know, people who were interested in Morpheus were people that were interested in PS4.
I
wasn't interested in Morpheus, and I said this the other week, because this kind of thing needs to be open, and it needs to be, like, you need to be able to plug it into whatever you want, and it needs to work, given a couple of provisos. And yeah, I don't see that happening with Facebook at all.
Yeah, but, I mean, so far they haven't done anything. I mean, granted, it's only been a week, but everything they've said so far seems to be that they're willing to keep that vision. I mean, you're going for worst-case scenario that they change their mind. But, I mean, like I said, I do think this opens it up to a lot more avenues than video games, and it does. Again, it's going to be like what Apple did with the iStore, in that it became a place where you can get games, a place you can get movies, music, and all this other stuff, because it's a platform that everybody has, instead of focusing solely on games, which does kind of limit your potential.
Yeah, but this is it, though, you say this as if Oculus was focusing on games because, like, games is, like, the first obvious thing that you would use it with, right? Because, you know, it's already... You're already simulating an environment in a video game. All it is, like, to get Oculus Rift to do that is just you put it on, you know?
Well, actually, I would say movies first, but go on.
Well, yeah, but, like, video games are interactive. Whereas Facebook, they make a website. And, you know, I mean, obviously there's nothing to say that won't change. But, like Oculus wasn't, they weren't saying we were only going to ever get this to work with games, and that's all we were ever going to do.
But that's not what I'm saying.
Games is the easy way to get it going. Because
yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, now they have the backing.
Games buy into gimmicky shit.
But now I'm saying they have the backing of a company that is willing to put billions behind this. It gives them a lot better chance to market it. It gives them a better chance to make a better product. It gives them a better chance to open this up to other types of entertainment mediums. It gives them a better chance to get this into people's hands so they can see, like, the applications beyond gaming. So you still have the gaming. Like, I don't see what changes on the gaming end with that. Now it just opens it up to a lot more people who might not have been interested in it if it's focused on solely gaming.
I just don't trust Facebook. Facebook is a company that has not done anything good for anybody. They're clearly not interested in that. So
I just don't have a big beef with Facebook. I don't know what they've done that's been necessarily super evil.
Well, it's just more the fact that they haven't done anything beneficial. Like, if they prove to me that they can do something like this other than just... I mean, I don't know, every time... They change the Facebook website, it gets worse. Like, I can't think of a worse thing to share my stuff on than Facebook. But then I have to use it because it's the only way that I'm ever going to speak to some people.
Well, I mean, part of that is I agree with you. I do think that it's kind of that over time it's become busy and very, very a pain in the ass. But I think part of that is just the amount of information that they want to relay and the amount of information people want. I mean,
nothing to say that couldn't happen to Oculus Rift. At least if they start small and they let people who, you know, if say there's a company that starts up and says, you know, we're going to use this Oculus Rift technology to make a social experience out of it, then, like, fine. You know, they can go and do that, whereas, you know, Oculus is just working on the technology, and you have a company that works on getting it working with games, and whereas Facebook is just going to push so much social stuff, and there's nothing to say that this won't get worse over time, just like their main product does.
But, I mean, who doesn't push social stuff nowadays? I mean, you get that on your game consoles, you get that on Steam.
Well, the thing is, it's like, with game consoles, the social stuff really takes a back seat. Like, for the most part, the social stuff makes sense, whereas Facebook tries to do everything it can. You know, it tries to do games, and look how that turns out. We get invites and crap that we don't want in our news feeds. You know, Well, you can disable them one at a time. Every time I disable one, two more come up.
Well, I get your point, but I mean...
Like, there was that time that they decided that news was going to be social, so everybody was saying, I'm reading this on The Guardian, and I had to turn every single goddamn one of those off, you know.
Yeah, but to be fair, that is somebody opting in. It's not like it was the default.
Yeah, but this is just going to be the same fucking thing. People, I don't...
That I say weed out your friends better. There are certain people, like, there are certain people...
It doesn't matter, like, if I weed out my friends like that, I'm just going to... I may as well just delete my Facebook account, because I'm going to be deleting everybody that I use it to keep in contact with. That's the problem. And, Facebook is not a company that... It's the combination of Facebook not being a hardware company. They are a data company. It's Facebook not being trustworthy because they haven't done anything good for anybody, you know. Had this been a hardware company like Asus or, I don't know, even Microsoft of all people, I'd be totally fine with that. But, no, Facebook.
Well, I am on board with it. I'm intrigued to see what happens. I still don't care much for VR, but I am intrigued to see what Facebook does with this now. Because like you said, they are a much more social company, and I would imagine that a much more social push could be nothing but good for this technology. But we'll see in the long run. So yes, that's Facebook and Oculus Rift. I guess the other big news of the week, which just broke today, was the ascension of Phil Spencer to the head of the Xbox division at Microsoft.
I don't have anything to say. Like, if Microsoft can magically make me trust them again because Phil Spencer's a nice guy, then cool. But as far as I'm concerned, it's too late for the Xbox One. I'm never going to get one because...
It's been, 5 months? It's a bit hard to say that now.
No, once you've lost me, that's it.
Fair enough.
That's the kind of person I am.
But they did kind of go back on almost everything that was negative from the get-go before it launched.
The point is that's the thing that they had to do. That's my point. They still sell... I mean, okay, yeah, Sony has this problem. You know, they still sell digital games for $54.99.
Doesn't everybody sell digital games at full price?
Well, that's not full price. That's above full price.
Well, it's the
that's
actual
above,
full price.
No, it's not. It's above full price.
What is your MSRP?
Fucking MSRP in this country is $45.99. No, it's $44.99, and they sell it at $54.99. That's ridiculous. Microsoft, if they can actually make the Xbox One the only box I'll ever need, that'll be great. But right now, it's like you need the Xbox One, and they want you to have the Kinect, and you can end up needing bloody hard drives attached to it. You know, if they can actually make it a one box, then sure, okay. If they can not ruin the franchises that I've liked for a long time, that'd be awesome, but there's a bit too late for that one, isn't it? I'm done.
I still have KO4, so.
I don't know. All I can think of Phil Spencer is probably the guy I wanted to least punch in the face when he was on stage.
That's
so
the only thing.
I guess that's positive.
Yeah, the only thing is I've been really confused with this whole, because this is like the third person that has kind of like, I mean, it was like first it was the lady, then it was EOP, and now it's like, I understand that all kind of cater into different divisions of Microsoft, but this has meant like the past, I guess, year or so has just been really confusing for them all over the place as to who's in charge.
It's mainly because Microsoft have had a massive internal shake-up of people because Steve Ballmer left and Windows 8.1 was a massive disaster, so...
Yeah, it's been... But it's not... Like you said, I think he's a very personable person, and I think now that Jack Tretton is gone, I guess he becomes the most likable person at E3. I don't know who Sony's going to wheel out this year.
We don't know.
We don't know. But I mean, by default, I'm a fan of Iwata. I know everybody isn't because of his broken English, but I've always found it endearing.
Iwata is a humble person.
I don't mind Iwata. I don't like Reggie.
I don't mind Reggie, but I mean, Reggie has Reggie.
Ah, Reggie with his fake pauses time, every second sentence.
Reggie's
it's
only
just,
like
ah.
I can only put up, like deal with Reggie when he's being really comedic, but when he's actually pressed with any issues, he's really dodgy about them. I mean, yes, it's Nintendo, but like he still just, like tries and ducks and weaves out of the situation. It doesn't quite work out for him,
which means he's great at his job. I mean, it's not that hard. They are a company who sticks to their guns no matter how good or bad they're doing. So it's always, you know, I don't know what you people expect him to say or do. His hands are tied, so he gives the answers he can. There's that. I guess while we're on Nintendo, we should talk about the Google Maps Pokemon thing, which is, I guess, their big April Fools. I don't get the point of doing April Fools. Oh, I guess it's April Fools.
This is for April Fools in Japan.
Fair enough. Which is actually pretty cool. Actually, Google and YouTube usually do a pretty good job with their April Fools in that they make it clear, but they make it really cool.
And they actually get you, like, they either have, like, a funny thing, like, video, or they have something you can actually do. Which is what they've done in this case. They've actually put Pokemon on Google Maps, which is really cool.
Which is what I mean. It's like something like, you know, like, I assume they're thinking, it would be awesome if they ended up being a Pokemon Master job, actually. But, you know, like, you don't expect that to be a thing. But the whole idea of like using Google Maps and being able to search the globe to find Pokemon in various districts is a really interesting idea.
And some of them are very strategically placed, I noticed.
Yeah, some of them are completely random. But...
yeah, and some of them are very strategically placed. Like, I noticed there's a Snorlax in the Vatican City. If you're looking for them, there's one on me.
Yeah. One thing I found weird, it was one of the first things, there is not a Pokemon in Nintendo of America's headquarters?
I found one in Nintendo of Japan's headquarters, though.
Yeah, it's one in the Nintendo of Japan. It's not in, I didn't assume. I actually have no idea where Nintendo of Europe is.
In Japan.
In Germany. Nintendo of Europe is in Germany.
Well, they may as well be in Japan.
Well, you have your own branch. I mean, we all know about Shibata.
They don't do anything.
They do a lot.
They get the games over quicker, but they don't do anything else.
And that's what they do. And they also have a development studio, but I don't know if they actually make games. I don't know what they do.
Development studio is just they do firmware stuff. Because they get the Actimagine video codec, which is something that only I know.
But yes, it's a great idea.
It's Nintendo making good on their promise of using smart devices so people can interact with their core franchises.
Yeah.
And it's cool. It's neat. And it shows that Nintendo, if you give your franchises to the right people, they do cool things with them.
Yes, but isn't that what they said?
But I mean, like, Nintendo's very sketchy about giving their licenses, like, to other people.
Oh, and for good reason. I mean, they tried it in the late 80s, early 90s, and I know 20 years is a long time. But yes, it is better to kind of pick your partners. But this is an interesting thing. What I'm kind of weirded out about, I actually haven't tried because I just found out about this before we started recording, actually, is I don't know, I don't think it's on the Wii U, which I think would be a great avenue to have that as well.
Yeah.
Somebody mentioned, and I don't know how well this would work, but it would be kind of nifty. If you ever used the Wii U, they have the Google Street View thing where you can walk around with the Wii gamepad. And somebody to combine this with Pokemon Snap, so you can look around and find.
Well, that's what the video makes it out to be.
Yeah, it turned into a full game. So it's like $15 on the eShop. I mean, they even cheated for you because they use like 2D sprites in the video, so you don't have to make like 3D polygons. But yeah, or the 3DS. I'm sure more people own that. But yes, it's an interesting thing. It's a little fun. I wish they had some sound effects. It's really weird that you capture Pokemon with no struggle and nothing.
Yeah.
I think that you get the Pokédex, that's kind of nifty.
And it's kind of disappointing there's only 150 of them. Like, you put them all in there, just scatter them all about the place.
I think part of it was probably making sure it's at key locations instead of having people, because I can't imagine how tedious it would be to comb the globe looking for every single Pokémon. Especially being that some of them are, like, you can stretch, zoom out the map to different levels, and some of them you can see wide, and some of them you have to be, like, on the street level to pick them out. That would be a pain in the ass. I mean, as always, the internet's at hand if you want. There's a Google document going around, which currently has 65 Pokemon found. That was quick. It's up to 80. This is what Refresh gets you. It gives you the location, and it gives you their Pokemon number in the game, and their actual Pokemon number, because they seem to have picked at random. So yes, that's Nintendo Google Maps. The best thing about it is that it's probably already on your device, because they updated it for you. If not, just go to update, and it's a pretty quick update, and you can play the game right away.
But if you have Windows Phone, I'm sorry, you can't participate. Get a real phone.
If you have Windows Phone, we'd like to meet you. What else do we have this week in news? Metro on current gen. And this wouldn't really be a news story, except for how the company handled it. Words of this, I guess, definitive edition. I don't know. Is that where we're going with this gen?
It's just going to be called Metro Redux.
Well, I don't know. I guess it was HD Remake. This is just like a collection, I guess. Came out this weekend.
What I understand is that it's going to include Metro 2033 and Metro Last Light, but Metro 2033 will get a graphical upgrade, so it might actually run on the Last Light engine.
Here's what they should call it, right? This is what I propose these be called now. The PC version. Tomb Raider, the PC version. Metro 2033, the PC version. Easy.
Metro 2033 did not look like Last Light on PC.
Well, they'll upgrade the PC version anyway.
They are going to sell this for PC as well.
No, they'll just sell a bundle of the two. That's all they'll do. Anyway, I don't like this trend because I play games on PC. It's like,
you what's happening.
Like,
marketing material that leaked. It's going to be on PC, PS4, and Xbox One.
Deep Silver can suck it if I'm buying a game again then.
You don't have to. I thought that was going to be the trend you said you don't like, because I really don't like this gen. It's pretty much starting off with a bunch of people.
I don't like the trend of porting last generation games that came out a year ago to current gen anyway.
Like, that's the one I don't like, especially being that
if you want to play these games at their best, buy it on fucking PC. Buy a PC, buy the game on PC. There you go.
I don't want to buy a PC, and I didn't play Last Light because it ran like shit on last gen consoles. Now I'm going to play Last Light in Metro 2033 with nice graphics, so I'm looking forward to this.
I'm just sick of these. I how they announce this. I'm just sick of people announcing ports of games that we just got, like Rayman, Last of Us, which hasn't been officially announced. Star Wars, Tomb Raider. But yeah, anyhow, going back to the original purpose of this segment, part of the reason why this is interesting is because instead of like saying no comment or we don't comment on rumors or speculations, they're like, yeah, it's a thing. We'll give you more information later on. And that's pretty much what you're going to have to do. Sometimes it is cheating people's intelligence when you say we don't comment on this and that, and no, we're not going to do this, and then you announce it 2 months later.
That's what you should do.
Yeah, they're pretty much upfront with it.
Well, this is it. I mean, I'm not a fan of...
I mean, just like the doing. I mean, just like Sony should be right about now saying, yes, we're doing Last of Us for PS4, because at this point, it's kind of ridiculous that they don't admit that it's coming.
Yeah.
It's a problem with the video games industry in general, that everybody loves to keep everything secret, and how dare we tell the people that are going to be buying this stuff that this stuff is coming, you know?
The amount of secrecy in this industry is
ridiculous. It's fucking ridiculous, yeah.
If
something's coming, just say so, for God's sake.
I will say it's not...
You don't have to show us anything, just say, hey, we're making this.
Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think it's a thing it's not a thing that's unique to the video game industry, I guess. It's any industry, and it really is because a lot of people have like this huge marketing schedule laid out in front of them. So they want to
Is
kind
it
of
every industry? Yeah, then why do we know what films are coming out like 2 years from now?
Yes, but okay. For example, do you know like when the Justice League movie is coming out?
The difference is
no, but I know it's being worked on.
The difference
is Warner Brothers hasn't come out and said that we're doing that. Even though it's been speculated for the last year. And that's because they want to announce it on their time so you can get it in the best possible right.
The
comic book industry is the same way.
The difference of the movie industry is when you, like the movie industry, they often we hear about movies that are being considered. Often we hear about movies that have just been greenlit. Often we hear about movies that are in casting. And then when the movies are out, we know how much those movies cost to make. Whereas the video game industry, we get absolutely none of that. Nothing.
But, yeah, I'm saying, but at the same time, there are stuff that, you know, like movies sometimes keep casting wraps as much as possible. Like even now, like you can go and there'll be casting calls and there'll be scripts where they use some type of pseudonym or some type of, you know, fake name to get people in there because they don't want it out until they're ready to do that.
Yeah, but still, we know about most stuff way ahead, especially if it's sequels. Just telling me that they are not going to do another, let's say, what do they have? It should be getting, it's probably has a sequel being worked on. Dishonored 2. You can't tell me they're not working on Dishonored 2.
Oh, yeah. And I get that. I'm just saying that like people want to do it in their own time, I guess. They want, because we had this discussion before. Like, you don't want an announcement when there's nothing to show. And I think
it's not that they need to announce it. It's just the secrecy when someone is asking a developer in some form, like, "Hey, what are you working on?" Nothing.
Yeah, but you also don't know if something like say they get fired and it gets canceled, and then you're like, "What happened to that game?" Or you know, like,
and that's when you go, "Oh, it didn't pan out because of why."
Yeah, but then I think companies don't want to always kind of put their cancellations up front because it does look bad for them. Like, why couldn't you?
Yeah, but this is the thing, this links back to Deep Silver pretty well, actually. I'm not a fan of Deep Silver because I think as a publisher they have no taste. Yes, it's kind of cool that they kind of did this, but there is not a single publisher on this planet that would have released Ride to Hell Retribution, but Deep Silver did it anyway, in that fucking state. And If that game would have been cancelled, well, I mean, okay, yes, it was a game that nobody was looking forward to anyway, but if that game would have been cancelled, it would have looked so much better on Deep Silver because of it, because I wouldn't be sitting here telling you that I think they have no taste.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's the same. I mean, look at, using a recent example, you've got people with Sony and the Sony Santa Monica IP where people are like, Sony shouldn't have cancelled it. You don't know the quality of the game. They just know it was cancelled and it was a new IP, so it must have been amazing.
Yeah, but those people are idiots.
Yeah, those people
and it works both ways, though. Like, this is why people have strict marketing schedules for these things. You may not like it, but at some point, it's understandable. And they probably don't want word to get out. Like, let's say you announce that you have Dishonored 2 in the works, but you have nothing to show for 2 years. People are just going to keep on asking you about Dishonored 2. Like, yes, they're going to keep asking you about it anyhow. But at least then you can say, like, we have nothing to say at the moment.
Well, I was going
to
say, that doesn't stop people with Fallout 4.
Well, I mean, yeah, people ask about Fallout 4, and I'm sure they're working.
I mean, as somebody who is an enthusiast, and I like to think that I have level-headed opinions about things, like, Capcom, they just said, yeah, we're doing Ace Attorney 6, and I was like, cool, the franchise isn't dead, that's nice, I can sit in peace, I don't care that there's no trailer, I know that there's going to be another game, that's great.
But,
you know?
But, I mean, how does that help you if the game's not out for 3 or 4 years? Like, just know it exists?
It doesn't matter.
It gives me hope.
It
gives me hope that I'm going to get more of the thing that I like. Because the period between Ace Attorney Investigations 2, releasing in Japan, and Ace Attorney 5 was painful for me. Because I knew that Capcom didn't really care that much about Ace Attorney. Well, and it could just be gone for all I knew. And then all of a sudden, there's the trailer for Ace. It wasn't even a trailer. I don't think they just said that they're making Ace Attorney 5. And I was like, oh, that's good. That feels good, you know?
Okay, well, for practical examples, what about stuff like Mirror's Edge 2 and Beyond Good and Evil 2? Like, we saw those, and we haven't seen anything since that, and they're both 2 or 3 years old at this point.
So?
They may as well have shown us nothing and just gone, yes, I think they
did. And I guess that's my point.
What is your point? That I am now going to be bothered that I have not seen anything of this game for a while?
Yes.
It's still being worked on. No, it's fine.
But, what's the point of you knowing it exists 2-3 years ago if it does nothing for you now?
It does for me that I know, I don't care about Mirror's Edge, but there are a lot of people who do care about Mirror's Edge, and they fear there would never be another Mirror's Edge, and now they can live in peace.
Yeah, it's a thing you can sort of rest in peace to know that at least they considered it, at least at some point they started work on it, and if it doesn't pan out, then that's kind of a shame. But at least at some point, EA saw worth in the franchise that they gave it another shot. You know, even if it's 2-3 years down the line, these things take time, you know?
Okay. I don't necessarily buy it, but I'm going to go with it for now because I want to end this conversation.
You are a very impatient person.
This is what I was saying about Valve.
Wait. How am I the impatient person when you're the one who's like, we need to know this now? And I'm the one like, it makes more sense to wait to announce it when you have something.
Yeah, but you want to... see everything right away.
No, I don't want to see everything right away. I want you to announce stuff when something is actually a product that's going to be released soon. I don't care about 2-3-4 year hype cycles. I would be fine with something being announced within the year it comes out. Like, I don't need any more time than it. I actually don't mind. I don't pay attention to most games until it's like 2 or 3 months before release. Like, this announcing a game, like Watch Dogs will be, 3 years old by the time it comes out? 2 years old?
I don't know. It was announced
in 2012.
Yeah,
so 2 years. And, in that 2 years, the time period for that hype cycle has passed now, where it's now just kind of like, oh, this is coming out now. And it's kind of a thing we were excited for when it was announced, but that window has clearly evaporated in that 2 years because we've either we didn't get constant updates, or the updates we got weren't things we wanted to see.
And whose fault is that?
I would appreciate, but then, if they'd have just said, then this is the thing, here's what I think, is with Watch Dogs specifically, had they just said, we've got a new IP in the works, it's called Watch Dogs, right? And they'd left it for 2 years, a year, I guess, and then they would have shown us something. We wouldn't have any hype problems with Watch Dogs at all. Had they just said that they're working on a thing called Watch Dogs, and then a year later said, here's a trailer, we wouldn't have this goddamn game graphics downgrade bollocks, you know.
Well, I mean, if they had said they were...
And my thing is mostly about sequels, not about new games. I don't care about your new game. If you tell me you're working on Poop Squad, I don't know, that doesn't tell me anything. I don't really care. At this point, I need to see something.
If it's a franchise, but just say we're working on something to do with it. We're working on this. It's going to be a HD remake. We're doing a sequel at some point.
But
so that's fine.
It's been settled franchise, but it's something different. It's like being secretive about a new Call of Duty. It's stupid.
Well, I mean, again, it's not stupid from a business standpoint. It is a marketing thing. You want to make sure to tell if the ass product ended before you start up with the next one. Movies are different in the sense that most people will watch a movie if they know it's getting a sequel because you can get it on DVD, you can do this and that. You don't necessarily know if, let's say you get a video game and you get a sequel announced. You don't know if it's going to be on this system, the next set of systems.
I don't have that problem. Because I play games on
PC. You have a PC, yes. Yeah. Okay. For the rest of us, the other thing with movies, and I think a lot of other industries, is that it's easy to kind of hit a target. You said that you have Spider-Man out in 2016. We know you can do Spider-Man in 2016. We've seen video games that said they're going to set a release date, and that gets pushed back, or that doesn't hit, or it misses it by a wide.
I'm not even talking about release dates, though.
So you're just saying that we have this in work, and that's that?
Yeah, that's fine for me.
I still don't get the point of that, but we're moving on because we're spending way too much time on this.
I'm more baffled by your reaction than anything else.
My reaction is the same. I've said this before. I'm much, much, much happier with shorter release windows where it's like Like Batman Arkham Knight is announced in February of this year. It's out in October, November. That's a very short hype cycle. I didn't need to know about this.
But we're not even talking about a hype cycle here.
No, but this is, I mean, this is basically what that announcement is, because you get people like, yeah, this is coming out. I can't wait for this sequel. That's basically what it is if you're not shown anything, but it's just announcing a date. That's all the purpose it serves.
Move on.
Yes, moving on. I guess we kind of hinted at this. We mentioned this with the Sony Santa Monica stuff, but another member of Sony, actually a couple of people left this week. I don't really remember which week bends into other weeks, but this week was the creative director of Uncharted 4.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Who left for Riot, which is one of those things that I always love when people, because people, one, I don't know how people don't know who Riot is yet.
Because Riot is, I mean, here's the thing, is this is going to go off on a tangent, so I'm just going to try and not let it go off a tangent. There seems to, like, when it comes to games that are really, really big on PC and seem to be only on PC, they don't seem to be that sort of pervasive in the sort of zeitgeist. Like, League of Legends, like, there are still people I talk about League of Legends to, and they're like, what?
Yeah, but it's like one of the most played games in the world.
Yeah,
like,
and
the average person I get, but when you have, especially for something like NeoGAF or Twitter, when these are quote unquote hardcore gamers, and to kind of be blinded by.
And this is it: is we all have our own bubbles, and the PC bubble is, you know, PC is still not the most popular platform out there, and I found out that World of Tanks has something like 85 million players, and I was like, really? World of Tanks?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, so, part of it is it's free, and I think you can do it on your mobile devices as well.
I didn't know that.
I think it is. But yeah. Extremely popular game. But yeah, when this came out, people were saying how he's going for a downgrade, going to Riot, and it's like, it's a much bigger company than Naughty Dog is. It runs like the biggest game in the world. It's not even a gift to play it. It's a huge game on streaming as well, if not the biggest game on streaming.
Yeah.
It's just weird that people have that blind spot, but it's a huge, like I said, it's a tangent. And this kind of, I mean, part of this is just, it's troublesome for Uncharted 4 because the creative director and the lead writer left within 2-3 weeks of each other. But, you know, Uncharted, Sony says, is still on track.
It might be a good thing after Uncharted 3, to be honest.
Because
Uncharted 3 was just, let's try and do that Uncharted 2 again. And
yeah, I'm not
going
to defend
it.
The only thing that bothered me about this creative director thing was his reasoning for going with Riot. Or, let's say, what he said about Riot I thought was weird.
Okay.
Saying, like, I'm going to them because they are very innovative.
Oh, that is not what Riot is.
That is one of the last words I would associate with Riot Games.
Yes, yes.
Well, maybe,
but,
yes.
Okay.
I assume if you say that they paid me out of money, it doesn't sound as well.
Yeah.
I was also going to say, I won't defend Uncharted 3, but I could be mistaken. I read that Uncharted 3 was done backwards and that they created the two set pieces and then they had to write a story around it.
That's correct.
So, yeah.
Explain a lot.
Yeah, so that might have been the problem. Like, if you're the lead writer, that doesn't help you if you basically tell, like, these are the plot points, try to make them make sense. Instead of saying, like, okay. And really, there's no right or wrong system here, I guess, because, you know, because technically speaking, you should have the points written out and then kind of make a game around that. But at the same time, from a game development standpoint, you might not have the technology or the resources to make that. So it should be a relationship that's always kind of working hand in hand, not one person saying this is what you need to do, another person saying this is what you need to do, and you try to make it work. It should be like, okay, we can do this. Can you write a segment that makes sense here, and then we'll script a cutscene there or something like that. Uncharted 3 seems to have got backwards, and for a lot of people, myself included, that really does hurt the game because a lot of it didn't make sense at all. It's like, oh, he's in a giant ship. He's on it. I still never got how he ended up on the desert in front of Elena, I should say. But that's whatever.
He fell from a plane.
Wait, was that the plane? I thought that was the ship.
No, that was the plane. That was the plane. He was hanging onto it and stuff, and then he fell down with those cargo things.
And then
he was in the desert.
No, I'm thinking of the... Because that's when he goes to the end and he sneaks on the plane. But before that, he was on the cruise ship, and that broke apart, and he somehow drifted ashore where she was staying.
Oh, that's what I meant. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. That also happened.
And that made no sense. Like, how did he drift to the perfect shore near her or whatever? But anyhow, yeah, it's just one of those things. And I said this before, I do still think it does kind of paint a weird picture of Sony, even if nothing is going on, it's just a bunch of happenstance coincidences. But to kind of tie that together, we had these famous Baltimore Pete Dodge story from this week, in which he kind of came out and was explaining why certain people had left Sony, either due to not being able to deliver a product on time or being, you know, dismissed to a lower position within the company. And one of those people he mentioned was the director of Drive Club, who I believe what he said was canned because the game was delayed and they had to revamp it. And he came out and said that was all false. He had a son that has some type of illness and he wants to be closer to home. I think he said something like a 4-hour commute, which is just insane. So he left Sony on good terms and decided to start up his own independent company so he could be closer to home. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to trust the guy who lived it than the guy who's reporting it, especially being that their stories don't even come close to matching up.
I think at the moment what's happening with Sony is just, it's actually kind of normal that people like that leave. It's more that we are just at the start of this generation and there's a lot of people paying attention to what's happening at Microsoft and at Sony. Maybe a bit too much attention.
I still think, especially being that a lot of these people have games in development, and I think that's what a lot of people do fair. It's like these people, like it's not like the Uncharted, like, you know, the guy from Sucker Punch, yeah, but that made sense. They just shipped Infamous. I mean, yeah, they just shipped Infamous. So maybe he wants to go on to other endeavors beyond that. That makes sense. But when these games are in production, it does, you know, bring up red flags to you and stuff like that. But like I said, we're not here.
Yeah, but in the case of, like we just said, going to Riot, is like, maybe it was just a bigger paycheck.
Yeah. They can afford
because
to pay more money.
Riot has money.
Yeah, and I imagine it might also be a promotion. Maybe he gets a different title. And sometimes, especially in the corporate world, titles mean nothing, but they mean the world. Because you can have the same exact job, and you get like executive in front of it, and it's like, yay, it looks great on your resume. And you get to tell people, even if you're doing the same thing, or you sometimes just work. Yes, I should say. But like I said, the whole point of the famous Mortimer story, the Pete Dodge story, isn't to rake him over the coal. It isn't to rake Drive Club over the... It's not to rake Sony over the coal. It's just, I wanted to bring it up personally, because I was one of the reasons we always say that we try not to talk about rumors on this show. Because rumors
except maybe when we are pretty sure they are true.
Yeah, like there's
from so many sources that
PS4 stuff we kind of mentioned. We didn't talk about it, we mentioned it. I mean, everybody's pretty much pointing out that's the case, and there's a lot of evidence to kind of say this is true. It's just Sony not saying it.
There's no reason.
But yeah, it's just that if you can't personally substantiate something, it's not fair to anybody to go spreading that. It could be great rumors, it can be terrible rumors, either way. You don't, there are rumors you want to believe in, and there's rumors that you don't.
This is the problem. This is the kind of stuff that Gaff loves. They eat that stuff so much, you know.
Well, I mean, it's not just Gaff.
And he's a Gaff person. I know he's a Gaff person, so...
Yeah, it's not even Gaff. I think there's... And again, this is kind of going into... You know, like they said, what is the old saying? Bad news spreads around the world before good news can put its pants on in the morning. Or a rumor spreads around the world before the truth puts its pants on in the morning. And that's true. It's like a game of telephone. You tell one person, the other person tells somebody a modified story of that. And by the time it gets back to you, it's truth, but it's been changed. So it's never responsible to kind of spread that information. As much as you can. Like, there are stuff that always seems so juicy and fun that we want to talk about, but it doesn't necessarily serve a practical purpose. I think one of the bigger ones that we've kind of avoided for the most part, has been the Amazon console, which has kind of dipped in and out of existence the past year and a half. We talked about it when they've made acquisitions like with
Double Helix
and stuff like that. But that's an actual thing that's been substantiated. We don't necessarily know what's going to pan out. Like Martin had suggested, we talk about the fact that they may reveal it this Wednesday, April 2nd, and it makes more sense to just wait that out and see what does happen on the 2nd than to kind of spread this information and it doesn't end up being true.
I wish that I could make stuff up and have people listen to me like that. That'd be cool.
That's the thing. It's like you can't just make up something and have people listen to you. Like, actually, that's not true. You can't actually do that. I was gonna say you need to have a reputation, but especially around this time of the year. This time of the year is terrible for two reasons. As we mentioned before at the start of the show, today is March 31st, tomorrow April 1st, which is April Fool's, which just means a lot of people think they're the funniest person in the world and they'll run some stupid prank. And then what happens beyond that is we get into E3 season, and E3 season means that everybody becomes an insider. Everybody has a third cousin who works at Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, Ubisoft, EA, Take-Two, and they'll have to go down on what they're going to show at E3, and people want to believe in their heart of hearts that these rumors are going to be true, because it's usually these grand visions of every sequel they ever wanted in existence, and it's these huge secrets that they know, and it's all juicy and stuff like that. And the funny thing about it, and I've always been a fan of this, is like the people who do end up believing this, and when the time comes and it doesn't pan out, they get mad, not at the rumor spreader, but at the company for not delivering on these promises. It's a weird cycle, but yes. It's
and the
one
thing with sources is also, it's not a bad thing if you have a good source, but usually if you, something you have to learn. If you want to be a good journalist, you at least find a second source. And if you can't do that, you better keep the thing to yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately, it's a tough shoot because as a journalist in any field, you want to be responsible, but at the same time, you don't want to miss the opportunity that maybe you're sitting on this gold mine, this juicy story that if you, you know, I think this is a huge problem with the internet generation in general, is that a lot of times people don't take that extra time to verify a story because they want to be the first one to break it, because you get those hits, you get those kicks, and people start to think back to you. But that extra 5 minutes to verify a story goes a long way a lot of times. I think one of the biggest things, and this is very troublesome for me personally, is Twitter and death notices. There are a lot of times when Twitter will start trending like RIP such and such, to the point now where somebody actually does die. My first thought is if this is real or not. And, you know, I don't personally know these people, but I do think the idea of killing somebody off or making it really muddy to know if somebody's actually dead or not does really hurt in the long run as far as integrity of these stories go. And it gets to the point where it's just hard to believe what you read at times. And that's never good for anybody, because it is nice to have a source that you can trust and get verified information from. Everybody wants to know the secret. Everybody wants to know it ahead of time. You need to verify that. And the other thing is, and I think Famous Modern World did a good job with this, is own up to it. If you make a mistake, if you get called on it, don't hide behind like, this is what I knew at the time. And, you know, say I was wrong and I'm sorry, and that's that. This is not so much related to video games, but I follow movies a lot. And there are certain sites I just won't read anymore because they report anything. And if it's not true, they just said, our source at the time said this. A Latino Review is a big one. Comic Book Movies is another one. Reading Crew, because they'll report anything. One of the things I think I don't know if we have this up on the site or not. One of the things I've been tracking, because I'm personally invested in it, is all the rumors surrounding the Man of Steel sequel, because we've had casting news that went back for a year, and so far nobody has been anywhere close to anything that's come out about that movie. But people continue to put up these rumors because they continue to want those hits.
Yeah. Before we close this podcast, one thing I wanted to say is it's more of a soapbox thing, I guess, because I saw this earlier today on Kotaku because it bothers me just so much that we actually... Do you guys remember that Sega announced that Phantasy Star Online 2 is coming to the West in early 2014?
Yeah.
Yeah, and since then we haven't heard anything about it, and when asked, Sega just says, it's delayed, we will talk about it in the future. So, the real weird thing is that apparently the game is now being released in Southeast Asia completely in English.
Wow.
Still no news on a Western release.
This is Capcom level shit, this is.
Just saying. And people out here, like me, who really like Phantasy Star Online, still don't know what's up with the game.
This is Ace Attorney 3 all over again. Oh my god.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's... I mean, there are a lot of decisions, especially from... We didn't mention this at the show, during the show, and I really... Because I'm never that great with financials, but Capcom announced that they are missing their projections a huge margin, and they're actually going to lose money. But I think a lot of Japanese companies are just kind of really throwing the hurt right now, and I think they're finding it harder and harder to find a Western audience for a lot of their properties. Because if I'm not mistaken, Phantasy Star Online 2 is also a Vita game, right?
It is, but it's mostly, I think, it actually a game that could easily catch on here because it's a free-to-play MMO, basically. Very cooperative one. So.
And it's very action-oriented as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I just feel like they probably wanted the Vita user base to be higher.
Yeah, but the Vita version is really not the primary version.
The PC version.
The PC version is the big one. That was actually announced first, and it was a PC title at first only, and just later they made Vita version.
Well, I honestly don't know. I mean, it's... Okay, we will talk about this, I think, separately next week, but I think Sega's an interesting case study in general. I think Capcom's becoming one. I think most Japanese companies are an interesting case study. At the same time, none of us are Japanese, none of us live in Japan, so we probably aren't the best source for that. But yeah, it's just one of those things. Maybe they're saving it for E3. I think this is one of those cases again where I think it would have been wiser to make an announcement close to the release, but we're not going to get into that argument again. So, it's just to wrap, because I think this is going on, and I do have to edit this the day it comes out. You can find us on the website, nerdsontherocks.com. We put up a poll, which has finished, for video game franchises people would most like to see as a movie, and kind of surprising, the number one pick was The Legend of Zelda.
I wouldn't agree with that, personally, but...
I want an Uncharted film with Nathan Fillion in it, please.
Nathan Fillion's way too old now.
They can have an old Drake.
From our poll, I actually liked Turok the best.
Why is Turok there?
Turok was my pick.
You could do a lot with Turok because it's kind of a blank slate.
Yeah, it's such an interesting concept because it's not something they've done in movies before. We've had dinosaur movies, but you've never had like a dinosaur combat movie, at least on a serious budget. And
Turok actually doesn't just have dinosaurs; also has like dimensional travel, aliens,
and other hunters and stuff like that. And it's actually a fairly popular property as well, which is weird that it doesn't make many games. But it has a comic book series, which I was surprised to find out. I think it's hit an issue 300. Which is insane. And it's been around.
It's based on a comic. I think last month or a month before, they started a new series. I read the first issue, which was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and the other thing is it has a lot of cool weapons. But yes, if you want to hear the full reason, the full explanation for all of this, check out Nerds on the Rocks episode 164, where we kind of determine this gist and our rationale for some of these picks. There's that. You can find us on Twitter at @duel_wielding. You can find us on Facebook at @duelwielding. You can find the site at Nerds on the Rocks on both Twitter and Facebook. I don't know if this will be up by the time, this probably won't be up for this week, but we will be going on Stitcher soon. So check out Stitcher, leave us reviews and all that other stuff. And I think that's it. You don't know. Oh, I guess this week will depend on what Amazon's doing, because right now, like we said, this month has no major retail releases as far as I know. I could be mistaken. So a lot of it might be news or recaps or us going through digital games, which are fine. So we'll figure that out as we go along. So for Martin, Daniel, and myself, this has been Dude Wilden episode 135. What kind of Pokemon are you? How do you do the things you do? Share with me your secrets deep inside. What kind of Pokemon are you? Are you loyal through and through? And do you have a heart that's true? What kind of Pokemon are you? Yeah. Come on. Yeah. Your normal type like Jigglypuff against the ghostly Gengar. The battle's real tough. Thunderbolt's a great electric attack till you get ground down by a Marowak. What kind of Pokemon are you? How do you do the things you do? Don't you bug me with a Caterpie. For flying types, the win's easy. Good luck with Muk and its poison gas. Make one wrong move and it'll kick your grass. What kind of Pokemon are you? How do you do the things you do? Share with me your secrets deep inside. Yeah. What kind of Pokemon are you? Are you loyal through and through? And do you have a heart that's true? What kind of Pokemon are you? Come on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reach higher with fire, go Flareon. Think twice about ice to be number one. Water's in order if you wanna be slick. Mewtwo's the best when you get sight. What kind of Pokemon are you? How do you do the things you do? Come on, Hitmonlee's the key for your fighting mood. And you can rock and roll with Geodude. Yeah. Fratini comes first when you choose dragon. But evolution's the solution if you're gonna win. What kind of Pokemon are you? How do you do the things you do? Yeah, come on. Share with me your secrets deep inside. What kind of Pokemon are you? Are you loyal through and through? And do you have a heart that's true? What kind of Pokemon are you? Ha, yeah, whoa, give it up. Keep on training so you're stronger and faster. Just can't stop till your power amasses. Now what is this? I gotta catch them all. Pokeball. What kind of Pokemon are you?
Great electric attack, yeah. But don't get ground down by